Hello, everyone. Okay. Jacob, it seems like you're getting kicked off. Oh, now you're back on. Can everyone hear me? Mic test.
You sound great.
Fantastic.
Hey, Nick. Hey, Nick. Hey, Jacob. Jack, how you doing?
Good. Mic test. How am I doing?
Sound good.
Right.
David.
Hey. What's up, guys?
Okay, let's just give it a minute and then we'll begin for a few more people to join. What's up, Zach, in the audience? How you doing? Jacob, it's really funny. I didn't realize your podcast, Built on Bitcoin, is the same name, Building on Bitcoin. Great name.
I chose it super randomly. Didn't put much thought into it, but yeah, it's working out pretty well because now everyone wants to build on Bitcoin. So
yeah,
is there a difference between building on Bitcoin versus building in Bitcoin?
Maybe. What's your thoughts on that? I feel like there is.
I almost feel like building on Bitcoin is like leveraging. No, I mean, I don't want to. Maybe it's not exact analogy, but I feel like BitVM is like more within Bitcoin, like BIP300 especially, because it's trying to be kind of more integrated, whereas building on Bitcoin can be much more broad, right? Like a Stax application, for example, could be built on Bitcoin, I would say.
Yeah, that's where definitions get really messy. And this is probably a discussion for the Twitter space, but like, you know, I haven't done much research into like ICP or even like wrapped Bitcoin on ETH. Like, is that, if you build an app that only supports wrapped Bitcoin, is that on Bitcoin or is it in Bitcoin? Like, it's using the asset exclusively. So things like that, it gets really, really murky and it becomes like a Puritan debate.
100%. Yeah. And then you end up with like other layers of abstraction. You can have a layer and then like an abstraction layer on top of that, which is probably where like wrapped Bitcoin might fall because it's on a whole separate chain and then an abstraction away from Bitcoin itself. Yeah, no, it's still messy after all this time.
Let's have this question in the Twitter space because this is a great topic. Yeah. Unless you guys have a million questions, let me not take over hosting duties for sure.
No, that's a great question, Nick. I'd agree with you. I would say BRC20 is like built in Bitcoin versus, like you said, Stax is on top of it or any other layer two, you know, like rootstock. But yes, let's begin. Let's start with a brief introduction of all of our speakers. Let's start with you, Jacob, and then we'll go to Jack, Nick, and then David.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me on to speak. So, yeah, my name is Jacob. Two things I'm most known for. One, I have a podcast I started about a year and a half ago called Built on Bitcoin. Started as a Stax focused podcast because Stax was kind of getting blackballed by the community. So there's like crypto and Bitcoin and nowhere in between. I was kind of filling that gap, talking to interesting Stax builders. Since then, I've expanded to just talk about anything Bitcoin related and just kind of like follow my curiosity. And then my day job, I work at the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, which is a early stage fund and accelerator that is, we're typically the first check into companies. And we invest 100K at this point, and we have a 4-month program where we help companies, you know, learn how to fundraise, build a good pitch deck, some marketing, some legal. So my job there is I'm the sourcing partner, so I'm finding the teams and vetting them for potential investment. Is my day to day.
Very cool, Jack. What's your day look like? What are you up to?
Yeah, so my name is Jack. I've worked at Gamma since my
venture into working in crypto. Previous to that, I had a pretty boring government development job and finally took the leap into crypto. So I worked at Gamma, which initially started, again, in the Stacks ecosystem. And I think you'll see a lot of people who are building in the Ordinals ecosystem came from Stacks because it just made sense. We were building on the closest thing to Bitcoin that could have digital assets. And once digital assets made their way onto Bitcoin itself, a lot of people naturally saw the potential there. My day-to-day is I'm kind of split these days between doing development for Gamma and doing kind of like ear to the ground. What's the newest things? What are the newest things happening in the Ordinal ecosystem and how can they apply to our platform? Doing a bit more of the research side, and then I'm always kind of involved in community engagement and making sure that artists and other users of our platform aren't running into issues. So that's kind of my high level synopsis.
That's really cool. And I'm sure we'll circle back and have a bunch of questions for you and Gamma. Nick, how you doing?
Hello. Hello, everyone. Pleasure to be here. Thank you, Ari and David, for hosting. Very good to see Jake and Jack in here. Good to see you guys, Rax, in the audience. Good to see you as well. Loving this. Kind of like a little Bitcoin Miami reunion here. So my deal is I actually did go through where Jake is over at the Bitcoin Frontier Fund. Went through the accelerator with Deep Lake as a co-founder over there. We were building DLCs, discrete log contracts on Bitcoin. I've been a Bitcoiner for as many years as gray hairs as I have, which isn't many gray hairs. I still have a pretty decent head of hair, but they're popping up at stations on my body. So there's that. Day to day, I'm just looking at building on Bitcoin, building within Bitcoin, building underneath Bitcoin, everything related to getting Bitcoin to scale, be more functional, and of course, bringing this new money to the masses. So I'm very excited to dive into it with you guys today.
Awesome. Glad to have you. So all you need is 14 gray hairs, by the way. That's not a whole lot.
Great point.
David.
Hey. So I'm David. I'm part of On-Chain Accounting with Aria. This is Aria. What number space is this at this point?
I can't really count, but keep getting more and more fun.
Yeah, and new faces constantly. So what we're doing is pushing the initiative for companies that are transacting and operating on chain to handle their back office, all their accounting needs. We both come from traditional accounting experience, a long list of places we've worked at and things we've done. And we've decided to take that all on chain. And, we're seeing a lot of different challenges working with a lot of different types of clients and, a lot of innovators, people like Nick, for example, that are really pushing the boundaries and really being super ambitious. So we see new challenges all the time. And, part of what we're doing is getting the word out there with different things in the space. So, I'm looking forward to seeing what everyone has to say today. And I'm excited to jump in.
Awesome. Yeah, like David said, David and I co-founded On-Chain Accounting, and that's for the most part what we're busy with day-to-day when we're not on the spaces. Okay, let's jump right in. I think a great place to start would be in the depths of this conversation, which in my opinion would be building on Bitcoin. And there's a lot being built on Bitcoin, which we'll go through and discuss the various layer twos and new side chains, drive chains that are coming up. And a question that I keep returning to, and I'm curious to hear everyone's opinion on it, is with all these new layer twos coming on, how do we see that compared to the Ethereum ecosystem? Previously it was quite clear, Bitcoin's this store of value, it's a super secure asset, and Ethereum does something different, it's a smart contract platform. But now we have smart contracts on Bitcoin, I think that divide, that line is getting blurred, and I'm curious to hear everyone's take on like where they see this differentiating factor between these two ecosystems, or maybe there isn't, maybe it'll just be meshed together one day. That's just a thought I keep returning back to. Jacob, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think they're going to coalesce towards each other. But I do think, so I think that you're going to see Bitcoin become increasingly more like, look like Ethereum when it comes to layers and moving assets up and down the stack, depending on your use case. Yeah, the tricky part here is that in Ethereum land, because of how expressive it is, building an L2 is actually somewhat easy, like being able to bridge a token up to Polygon, for example, and that's really freaking hard in Bitcoin. And so you have this issue of like a peg in peg out problem is one of the biggest ones. So like, if you send your Bitcoin off, can you securely get it back off of that L2? It's a huge problem. So I think that there's clearly demand for people that want the use cases that are on Ethereum and these other expressive L2s. So I think you're going to see that move on to Bitcoin in a big way increasingly, especially if someone finds a good peg in peg out solution. So the best way for that to happen is through an opcode upgrade, but that's very contentious in Bitcoin. So you have things like SBTC trying to solve for this, maybe ZKs through ordinals is one solution. So I think they're going to blend together a lot. But a big what if there for me is the peg and peg out thing, because you're introducing a lot more trust in that question on Bitcoin that you don't have on the Ethereum side.
Yeah, it's a really good point. Are there any updates as far as the release for SBTC or the Nakamoto upgrade for Stacks?
I know some, Jack, you might be a little more plugged in, or Nick, but the testnet is, they opened up the testnet like release for a small subset of people about a week ago. I think the testnet is live right now, so that they're practicing or making sure the peg in peg out process works as intended. And I've heard that they're going to increasingly ramp that up over the next few months, and they're aiming for a Q1 release. But there's a lot going on in that release. It's not just SBTC, but the Nakamoto upgrade, which we can talk about later. But so there's a ton of problems to solve over the next few months. And in most development, you know, if they say it takes 3 months, probably target it at 6, like just double it to be safe. So hard to say, but things are definitely progressing.
Yeah, it's really exciting. Would love to see a good, Bitcoin solution, a smart Bitcoin solution on Bitcoin.
Yeah, Jack, do you have any? You have any closer relevance to SBTC?
I think generally you nailed those timelines. That's also what I've been hearing is public testnet closer to end of year Q1. So yeah, let's just keep our eyes peeled. It's going to be really interesting to see how that works. And I think one of the interesting things, if you compare like L2s on Ethereum, I think they tried to accomplish a couple goals. Polygon, for example, you're going to have cheaper smart contract interactions and theoretically is faster. But that being said, L1 on ETH is pretty fast as it is when you compare it to something like Bitcoin. And the irony on Bitcoin is obviously like inscribing is expensive, but generally speaking, like normal like send transactions, like transfers, whether you're transferring plain old Bitcoin in a UTXO or a UTXO that contains an ordinal, those transfers, even when fees are high, really aren't that expensive. We're talking sub $10. So you kind of have an inverse of the situation that's on Ethereum. And I would argue that like Polygon has not done that well. There's a couple of big projects that have used Polygon for things, but I always feel like people end up gravitating back towards L1. I mean, look at what happened with Utes. And so it's kind of interesting to see that we may be in a situation where the chain is like, Bitcoin is obviously like really slow blocks by design, and an L2 would actually like speed up transactions by like a huge magnitude, like a huge order of magnitude. And obviously like fees could potentially be cheaper. I don't think that's really the use case for it anyway. But it presents like a completely different, environment for trading with like SBTC, which would be, it would feel like you're trading with Bitcoin rather than trading with like Matic on Polygon or whatever. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out.
Yeah, that's actually a good point that I've been thinking about a lot. And sorry, Nick, I want you to give your take too, but I'm going to hog the mic a little more. But I do think that there's no world in my mind where Polygon became useful if Ethereum wasn't sufficiently expensive for an extended period of time. And I kind of feel the same way with Bitcoin, which is that there's a lot of stuff happening on Lightning. You know, Stax is doing this SBTC thing. There's quite a few different chains, Rootstock, Liquid. I don't see why anyone would use those in mass unless L1 became, you know, 100 sats per V-byte, 200, 500 sats per V-byte, like as the baseline. And so sending a transaction becomes a decent proportion. If you're sending like $1,000, it costs you $100 in fees. It's not till that point that Lightning really pops or Stax is really going to pop. So that's something I'm watching closely is like, is there something that breaks that narrative? Lightning has probably done the best, but everything else around the ecosystem hasn't. And I think it's probably a function of fees and cost, most likely.
Yeah, it's a really good take. I think, though, with Lightning, a significant upgrade, you know, for utility would be the Tapper asset upgrade, right? And as of now, you can send Bitcoin on Lightning, which is great, but, you know, not many people are really transacting in Bitcoin. They're not really buying goods or services unless you're in a country like El Salvador where it's actual currency and they don't have a stable country's currency. But with this upgrade, we can see stablecoins on Lightning, and Lightning transactions are not even, you know, pennies, like super cheap. So I can see that being a catalyst for massive adoption using the Lightning network.
Yeah, I think what's interesting too about Lightning is if you look at the on-chain or if you look at the data from nodes that have been tracked, half of the transactions are less than 30 cents. And so this micropayments narrative is definitely the majority. And I think that's where the most innovation is probably going to come, because if you look at traditional credit card processors, they'll take like 2-3% and typically charge a flat fee of like around 35 cents. So Lightning is coming at a place that other credit card processors using Stripe or something else, they literally can't, you can't run those functions on those and be, break even or above water. So there's a lot of things you can do in the micropayment space. It's typically currently right now like gaming stuff is the big one. So you play a game, you get half a penny or whatever, and those just keep getting sent over. But I think there's a pretty big design space that hasn't been figured out yet of, you know, what's a use case. For example, one that I've thought about is like when I have to send a fax, I have to like scan a PDF and then go to some website and pay. Typically what they'll do is they'll say, we'll give you 100 faxes per month for $10 a month. And they do that because they can't sustainably just charge you 50 cents and make any money. So they bundle it to give you a bunch of perceived value, even though I just have to send one fax to get this thing to my destination. I think Lightning could crush in use cases like that, where you just take your 25 cents, they take, you know, a couple sats fee, and you send like the single use or like pay-per-use model. That's a complete business model like revolution that doesn't currently work with the credit card model. So this micropayments on Lightning is really interesting.
Yeah, I think it's going to eat their lunch, these credit card processing companies.
The comparison of like Lightning and Bitcoin versus Matic and Ethereum is interesting, especially when you kind of consider in this scenario, kind of break your brain a little bit. But technically, like Matic can flip ETH, right? Like, what if consensus shifted over to the DADDY chain in a way? Like, it's technically entirely possible. It'd be weird as hell. I can't imagine what circumstances would even have to take place for that to happen. But you also consider, I don't think it'd be possible. Like, the fact that it's a possibility with Matic and ETH, I don't think it's possible with Lightning, because it still has to, someone still has to get paid. Like, that miner still has to, you know, everything's still kind of much more tied to that DADDY network. I don't know. It's, again, it's like such an outlandish example, but like, it's one that's an important to kind of go through, right? Because like, it's crypto, anything can happen. We got to kind of be prepared for what's actually to come and how these things can even break should those scenarios occur.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I want to go back into building on Bitcoin specifically. There's a lot that is going on Bitcoin. For example, we have the BitVM, which is something that someone recently released a white paper for. Nick, are you familiar with this?
Yeah, I think it's sexy as hell. I mean, I think all these things are hot in one way or another. My gauge for what is hot or not is basically its elegance, right? And I mean, BitVM is like seemingly as primitive as you can get, right? I mean, everything kind of circling within Bitcoin script, like the headline of making Bitcoin Turing complete by itself is nuts, right? I mean, it's been like this is a huge kind of point when it comes to Bitcoin that it's not Turing complete, that it doesn't have all these capabilities. And it's if it's discovered, right, and it's like unveiled, and then it works, and then it actually has application, and it's mathematically still elegant. I mean, it's insane, right? Do I understand it like incredibly technically? No, I could probably explain to you DLCs a little bit better. And I think, honestly, compared, you know, between all these different methods of putting Bitcoin to work, I don't know where I really fall on like between DLCs and BitVM and BRC, right? I mean, they're all much closer to Bitcoin than ETH. So that's already kind of where my head is at. So we're already on one side of the aisle with it. And then it's just a matter of like refining, like which row of that aisle are you actually sitting in? I want to be in the front row, but I don't think we know what it is yet.
How do you think about security? Or is that not really a thought? Like, for example, I know with BitVM, the design is for the computation to be off-chain, which is, you know, why it's scalable and possible, like what, you know, as opposed to, let's say, these other, let's say BRC20, which is directly on the chain. Is that a factor in your mind?
My understanding is that since it's still kind of checking against Bitcoin, then you still kind of grab onto the security of Bitcoin. I would love to know if Jake or Jack have more insights on that piece. I'm honestly not 100% on. I mean, it's a good point because like a DLC is, you know, kind of structured very differently, right? It's kind of all on that main script, so you don't have to worry about any of these external things. Yeah, no, it's something to consider. I'm not 100%.
Right. Okay. Yeah, it's really exciting. I can't wait for it to launch and to use it.
I mean, that's the other interesting thing is like, there's not like a launch, right? I mean, it's almost like, you know, a couple guys came back from the mountains in California and they're like, holy crap, we just found like this river of like golden gold or liquid gold. Like, we didn't know that you can melt this crap too, right? And it's almost like finding a whole new use case out of the thing that everybody thought that only had one use case. There's no one came out and said like, all right, everyone, we're launching liquid gold. Like, no, it was just discovered, right? And that's how you know that you have something on your hands, because I believe that Bitcoin was also discovered, right? Like, it would have happened at some point. Like, same thing with infinite monkey theorem. Like, they're gonna eventually write out Shakespeare. Someone would have eventually come up with Bitcoin. And I think similarly, someone would eventually have come up with DLCs. Someone would eventually have come out with BitVM.
Right. That's an interesting take. Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's hard to know. But yeah, absolutely. A question for everyone, but particularly I'd like to get Jacob's take on this. So we have, and I might be missing one or two. I know we have Stax, we have Rootstock, we have the Liquid Network, we have BitVM, which is in its beginning stages. We have RGP, which I was just listening to on Jacob, your podcast. That's how I was introduced to it. Great podcast. If anyone's looking for another Bitcoin podcast, highly recommend it. I'm curious how you...
Runes? Are you forgetting runes? I guess that's another one to maybe add. Forget me, go on.
Okay. No, please. If there's anything else that I missed. Yes, I'm curious, like, how... Are there any plans, or is it even possible for these different layer twos to one day share liquidity? Are they totally separate, like, silos, which, because of their technology, is, like, not a possibility to consolidate one day? I'm just curious. And then just high level, like, how do you think about them? You know, for example, in the Ethereum ecosystem, you have different kind of rollups. You have ZK, you have optimistic rollups, you have POS chains on Ethereum, right? And they have different trade-offs. Some of them are cheaper, some of them are faster. So I'd like to get your take on the layer two different networks on the Bitcoin blockchain.
So just to make sure I understand the question, the first is about liquidity, meaning can we centralize like the capital so it's not so fractured? And the second question is something like, do I think that L2s will be application specific? Is that the question?
Yes to the first one. Like, what's the share? Like, is it possible to have share liquidity? Right. Like, I know with ZKs, it's going to be possible to have share liquidity. Or let's say if you're using that different optimistic tech stacks, you can have share liquidity. And then the second question is, amongst the layer twos on Bitcoin, yeah, are there differentiating qualities that people will use different ones for? Or are you seeing differences? You know, maybe some of them are better suited for certain tasks.
Got it. So on the first question, I have no idea. We have an investment in a company called Bitflow that's trying to solve this exact question, trying to solve the liquidity issue across Bitcoin. So, for example, if you look at DeFi, doesn't really exist on the L1. We're starting to get some companies like Liquidium that's doing like ordinal lending, using PSBTs and DLCs, I believe. On Lightning, you have fast payments. And then like on DeFi, Stax kind of has some, but it doesn't use, it has a wrapped version of Bitcoin is the main source. And I think the TVL is something like 40 million. So it's pretty low. Rootstock is the current leader in TVL. I think it's around 70 or 80 million. And then it's hard to find numbers on Liquid. I remember searching a few months ago and it's like, they're very privacy focused. Or maybe it's just so small that they don't show it and don't call it out. But so when it comes to liquidity, yeah, I don't know. I think this issue of the peg in, peg out and how expressive Bitcoin is the problem. Meaning that whenever you want to solve for liquidity, you have to introduce some kind of trusted middleman. And SBTC is trying to be trust minimized, but whenever you're bridging, and back to Bitflow, Bitflow solves this by being a bridge between, say, SBTC, native Bitcoin, and RBTC on Rootstock, for example. So you might have different liquidity pools on those different chains, and if you want to swap into a different asset because there's different liquidity pairs or swaps you can do, they make it easy to be a central function to swap across the different flavors of Bitcoin, but they're a bridge, and there's some trust assumptions there. So I don't know enough about ZKs to have any strong stance. So I think it's going to be a continually hard problem. I don't think there's an easy solution to this, especially if you don't want to have any trust assumptions. Like, I hold my keys and no one can steal my stuff. That seems like a very, very high, hard bar to hit. As far as like where adoption goes, I don't know. I've been bullish on Stax for a while, and now after seeing Ordinals pop, there's a humongous thirst for just doing things on the L1, and it's getting more and more advanced. So like you have DLCs, which allow you to do these kind of like pass-fail lending or betting, different kind of things. You have Lightning, Ordinals is ish, kind of ish on the L1. So yeah, that's what comes to mind for now. I had more thoughts, but I lost them, so I'll let the other guys pop in for a sec.
Sure, I'm sure they'll come back to you. I heard we have Dylan in the audience from Bitflow. If you'd like to come up and just give us a brief update on what's going on at Bitflow. I just sent you a speaker request, if you're available. That would be cool. Okay. I haven't looked at Rootstock in a while. I used to, if I'm not mistaken, Rootstock's been around for a long time. I remember seeing them in the El Salvador conference 2 years ago. And yeah, I haven't checked up on them recently, but a really cool project. So you mentioned like,
I will say, I have some thoughts because it's one thing I've been thinking about is there's a pretty big debate or chasm going on right now between off-chain scaling and on-chain scaling, or options that have global state and don't have global state, and it's hard to see where that's gonna pan out. So, for example, just speaking of the ones you laid out, like you have Bitcoin L1, which includes things like DLCs and Taproot, BitVM, and kind of Ordinals, although you have this kind of like other indexer on top. And then you have Lightning, which is off-chain. You have RGB, which is off-chain. And both of those don't have global state. So you can't do traditional DeFi on either of those without some kind of hacks to make it work. And then you have these other global state blockchains. Bitcoin is obviously the main one, but Stax, Rootstock, and Liquid all have global state as well. And the way you interact with those is fundamentally different. So because you have global state, you just have your keys, and your keys unlock things on the ledger that you can then move tokens. On a distributed or peer-to-peer network like Lightning or RGB, that doesn't exist. So there's no idea of what the global token consensus is unless you're using a centralized indexer. The way that RGB works, for example, is that I just hold the wallet does more. There's not like a node running. It's done on your machine. And if I interact with a contract to say swap with Nick for some swap an ordinal or what they call a UDA or a unique digital asset for some Bitcoin, we both have the contract on our local machine. We hold just the pieces that we need and we swap that. And then we keep that piece of the contract on our machine. And so as our wallets keep track of the things that are relevant to our token specifically. So that's, we'll see how that plays out. It's not clear to me which one's going to win long-term, whether it's Bitcoin is like the mother or king global state ledger. And then there's off-chain options that we just use for like utility purposes, swapping tokens, but we just hold our own contracts. Or run our own nodes in Lightning's case, or if we do use other global state machines like Stax or Liquid or Rootstock, and those become the de facto standard that everyone uses. So that I'm watching it closely. It's a really open question to me right now based on adoption. I think it can go either way.
Can the Bitcoin layer one support all this activity on the main chain
for like RGB and Lightning, or
Well, Lightning's a little bit more, from what I understand, it doesn't move around as much once you open a channel, and you use, you know, you fill it, like I don't think it's as big of a toll on the network. If a lot of people are using Lightning, it does not affect the Bitcoin network. Does RGB have that same setup?
Yeah, it's similar in my understanding. The main difference is that with Lightning, you have this idea of the because it's meant to settle instantly, the route you're going to has to be online. So you have to have some kind of node that the end destination is online. So if I'm going to pay Nick, or I'm going to pay Walmart, for example, that node that I'm routing to has to be live and online for it to finalize. If it doesn't, it's going to fail. They're working on some solutions for that, but I don't think anything has been yet. RGB is kind of the opposite. So it also happens off-chain using cryptography in the wallet, and they use something called single-use seals. So you can think of it like there's a lock on this transaction or this batch of UTXOs. You break it, you do some state change, and then you re-lock it. But that's all happening off-chain. You only need to send a transaction and like go back on-chain when you want to do something more finalized or you want to settle some kind of dispute. The cryptography will map to whatever that state changes happened, and then Bitcoin and the wallet of RGB will confirm what happens. But as far as being efficient, I think both of those are reasonably efficient. It seems like RGB can do more though. RGB Taproot assets are starting to get to that place where both of them allow you to say, if you wanted to create multiple stablecoins or some whatever, I want to create Jake coin and REA coin and Nick coin on the same transaction, I can do that on either of those now with Taproot assets or RGB. I can mint a million of each in one Taproot transaction, and then the rest will happen off chain as we distribute those tokens. So it's, as far as bloating the chain, they're both reasonably efficient.
That's really interesting. Wow. Jack, how you doing? I'm curious, are you guys at Gamma anticipating the RGB, like implementation for it, and these other, I know you guys have ordinals now and you guys are very on the cutting edge of what's going on in Bitcoin. Is there anything in the works that you're looking to integrate into the Gamma app?
Frankly, right now, we're kind of staying in the lane of ordinals and specifically like an art focus on, our application. I don't know if everyone here has seen, we launched like a prints offering, which is essentially like an editions launch. And what it does is it avoids the necessity to pay the high fee every single time you mint a piece of art by using like a recursive on-chain engine. That formats and like adds a print number to the bottom right of the art. Before I steer too far off your question, we're definitely kind of staying in our lane on ordinals and keeping an eye on what's coming in the stacks upgrades. But we're always paying attention to what else is going on and what other aspects and what other, L2s or side chains are popping up. But right now we are pretty much staying focused on the Ordinals ecosystem and Bitcoin L1 in the current state.
That's awesome. And of course, Stacks. I'm actually a really big user of Gamma. I think majority of my NFTs are actually on Stacks.
I think I'm in the same boat.
It's great to hear. I see we have in the audience as a listener, Vinay. How you doing? Long time no see. We met in Miami at the conference. Thank you for joining. If you guys like what you're hearing, please give the speakers a follow. Just real quick, Jacob. Jacob and Nick and Jack, if you guys want to do a plug, people listening, if where they can find you, if and what might people reach out to you for, you're welcome to do so.
If you're here, you see my icon, but yeah, you can follow me at Jake Blockchain. For the podcast, you can search Built on Bitcoin on YouTube or go to builtonbitcoin.xyz. If you want to get some money and get some acceleration, if you're building something and need some assistance, the Bitcoin Frontier Fund, we're here to help you guys. We love supporting Bitcoin builders, both the people. Nick was in the last cohort. Gamma was in cohort 2 for us. So, we're big believers in Bitcoin, but also been supporting Stacks for a long time. And you can check us out at btcfrontier.fund for that.
Yeah, I'll just throw out a quick shout out to Gamma. I'm pretty boring on Twitter. So if you want to see what's the latest at Gamma, I'll usually retweet it. But for the most part, we're at TryGamma on Twitter. Any artists looking to put their art permanently on Bitcoin, I would totally encourage you to take a look at what we're offering. And yeah, I'm not gonna plug too much too hard here. So I'll pass it on.
Okay, thank you. And my name is Arye. I'm a co-founder of On-Chain Accounting. If anyone needs help with crypto accounting, please reach out. We're happy to help. I have two questions that I prepared that I've experienced in my interaction with the Stax ecosystem. And not to put you guys on the spot, but if you guys know, it'd be really interesting to hear. And if anyone else in the audience has questions for the speakers about Bitcoin, Stax, other layer twos, these guys are extremely knowledgeable. Not to put too much pressure on them, but they might be able to answer your question. I see we have a request. We'll have you come up in a moment. So question for you guys. I remember this was actually around the time of Bitcoin Miami. There was a whole, I don't know if you want to call it the BTC domain wars. I don't think anyone called it that. You know, on Stax, we have the BTC domains, and then there were domains on actual Bitcoin as like, I think it was like some sort of BRC20 version of it. And there was like an issue between, you know, indexing. I don't exactly understand the technical issue, but basically there's like a conflict of like, okay, how do we add a differentiate between these two domains? People are gonna mix them up. Was there any resolution between the two communities on that?
As far as I know, no, there wasn't. And I think that the creator of the other BTC standard actually pivoted to building ZK rollups on Bitcoin. So I don't think it's his focus anymore. I don't think he's even pushing it that hard. So I think when it comes to .BTCs, the debate that was happening in Miami is kind of over. It's more of there's this unspoken thing still currently going on of like, does L1 ordinals names work well enough, like SAS names, or does something like a more robust system like on Stax going to be the one? But that's still an open question of, I think whenever you can, the L1 is going to be the winner, but due to how limited the functionality is there, it's unclear if Stax.BTC or BNS.BTC is going to win versus some other solution on L1 that has to leverage a centralized indexer to keep track of things. But as far as that specific topic, I think it's pretty much done for. I think that the .BTC on Stax is still the one that people focus on and think about.
I'm rooting for the one on Stax. I think it has they were first, and they have the biggest community. So I'm rooting for you guys.
And aside from that, the one on Stax actually has like smart contracts backing it, which have, you know, renewal processes, and you know, it keeps a log on chain of like what everything is, rather than like just first to inscribe like the text of a domain name. I think is like, I'm sorry to put anything down on Bitcoin, but I think it's just dumb to race to I inscribe jack.btc first, like I'm the winner. Now we need some external indexer to prove it. Like, I don't find that compelling at all. And obviously, like, you know, someone may come up with a standard on Bitcoin and try to claim .BTC. Like, I would do recognize that, like, .BTC on Stax is on an L2. And I understand that people, you know, may not like that. But if you're going to debate that, then come up with a better standard on Bitcoin rather than everyone just racing to inscribe some text. And if your argument is compelling enough, like you should be able to win that debate of an L1 domain name. So that's kind of my stance on it.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. Like, you can't give up functionality and everything just because, oh, it's a layer two and let's just do it on Bitcoin. Like, it's not, you know, it's not going to take off, and it's not a good trade-off. It just doesn't work. My other question is, I don't know if anyone here has experienced this, but I have two wallets of stacked stacks, which is receiving Bitcoin rewards, and they're both being sent to the same address. The address that's receiving it, the Bitcoin address that's receiving the Bitcoin, is only receiving one Bitcoin per cycle, like one distribution every 14 days. I was wondering, I tried getting an answer on Discord, but no one's really able to help. I was wondering if, is it possible that it combines the reward together and sends it out at once, or is it possible maybe one of them is not stacked properly? I'm just curious if you have any insight on that.
So at the protocol level, I don't believe so. If I had to guess, you're probably using a pool to do this. You're probably using Expert, if I had to guess, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're doing it on the back end for you. So okay. at the protocol level, there's a dynamic minimum based on the amount of stacks stacked. I think it's something around 100,000 stacks right now. And that minimum allows you, if you win, it's a lottery, if you win, you get a reward slot. And so the reward slot will be somewhat predetermined, and the miners that then send the Bitcoin to participate in stacks mining, you'll get that reward for that slot. And so what Xverse does is they gather a bunch of funds on your behalf. They get a certain amount of slots, and they do math to give you, oh, we won 17 slots and we're holding this much STX. And as a pro rata portion, you'll get 10% of the distributions, and then they gather those together and then send them as one transaction to save on fees.
Got it. Okay, that explains it. That makes a lot of sense now. I had a feeling, but I don't know why no one was able to confirm it, and I'm glad you're able to. Okay, so we have a speaker, Hero Gamer, from Community Governance Residence for Stacks Organization. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Hey, just want to jump up and say hi. Good to see Jacob here and Nick. Everyone here. And I just want to big shout out to Jacob for keep doing the podcast, because I was listening yesterday on the way to a meetup, and then I met Toby. So I was listening to the investment one from Mike. Can't pronounce his surname, but I was listening to him and then heard like Lightning Venture invested in Ordinal Spot, and like it's only non-Bitcoin, you know, non-Lightning stuff that they invested. So it was pretty cool to hear. And yeah, just thank you, Jacob. Keep like churning out these really educational podcasts. And also I was listening to the one about RGB. That's how I learned about, you know, like you have these swaps like in wallet and stuff and holding your own state like client side. So yeah, just really cool.
Thanks, brother. Good to see you. And for those that don't know Hero, so like Stacks has built a lot of stuff that isn't currently utilized a bunch. Even the BNS names, for example, like you kind of see .BTCs, but they haven't really gained a bunch of traction. And there's so much work done on BNS over the years to make it a robust system that no one just appreciates. And one of the things that Stacks does pretty well too is trying to be decentralized as a community. Like, how do you gather opinions and come to answers that the most people feel okay about in a decentralized way? It's super freaking hard. Like, I'm the idea of DAOs currently, I think it's cool, but we've seen a lot of snafus with voting going wrong with DAOs, where they vote on chain and then the multi-sig holders don't go with the consensus, things like that. So Hero is one of the guys that's like spearheading a lot of the conversation around governance on Stacks. So just want to give him props. It's one of those like he's an unsung hero to the Stacks community for doing it right. And Stacks also doesn't get enough love for trying to do governance in a way that's the most fair. It's a really hard problem to solve, and they're trying the best to solve it. He's one piece of that. So shout out to Hero.
Yeah, I can say, funny enough, you talk about the BNS just now, like you guys, And actually, I just happened to jump on the BNS call after a long time, which, you know, spearheaded by Larry and Hank. And the one of the challenges with BNS is exactly what you're talking about, because BNS isn't owned by anybody. So anybody can say they would like this, but they kind of need like the whole community consensus, like to really sort of push for an upgrade. There are differences in opinion. Some people are loud. Some people, you know, just want to build. And it's just really hard to get consensus. That's why it's a little bit slower. And today they were talking about like trying to build like a working group, or have a working group more visible to gather more community opinions, in order to sort of drive that decentralized conversation. And yeah, they were only talking about today, so I think they're gonna do like more amplification, I guess, and have this sort of greater conversation around what's gonna be the next sort of BNS, what's that gonna look like, BNS 2.0, which will be part of the Nakamoto upgrade.
Yep, and I know we're coming up on time, Arye, so you finish it out however you want to, but I just want to put it on your radar. Super Testnet is in the crowd. He's the guy that has the unassuming profile picture that looks default. And if you want to get any kind of like questions about the latest bleeding edge of BitVM, he's definitely the person to bring up on here. So if you want to cover that topic as we close out, that would be one someone to bring on, or we can do whatever else you want. But just want to put that out there.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I actually had the opportunity to meet Super Testnet in Miami. Let me see if he's available to speak. Great guy, patiently explained to me. We're trying to figure out if we can put NFTs on Lightning. And let me see if he's available. If not, no worries, but glad to be able to hop on in here. Jacob, you mentioned like there's so much that Stacks has built that people are not aware of. I know that two NFTs that I picked up a while ago, one was Block Survey and one was the Explorer NFT for the blog application. I'm just curious.
Seigel.
Yeah, I'm just curious. Are any of these, I know at the time a few people were using them. I'm curious if there's any renewed attention on these, or how have they been playing out?
Block Survey is still doing well. They're kind of in the middle between Web 2 and Web 3 now. So they did what you said, which is the NFT drop for, I think, a lifetime pass. And for people who don't know, Block Survey is like it's a more secure and private form of like Google Forms. Seigel, yeah, I'm not sure what Seigel's up to. I think Ryder also did a drop where if you got one of their NFTs, it entitled you to one of their hardware wallets once it launches. And I think that Kickstarter for like the general public is going live on November 1st. So they've been building that for a long, long time, and that wallet looks super interesting.
Cool. Do you know how much? Do you know how much the Ryder NFT is going for?
They haven't announced it yet. They're announcing it on the call, and they keep dropping emails saying if you sign up, if you RSVP before the stream starts, you save $90. But as far as what the cost is, if I had to guess, it's probably gonna be around $3.99, given kind of where the hardware wallet's space currently is and how novel and new and some of their feature set. My guess is that between 300 and 400, but that's totally speculation. I have no idea.
Yeah, today they just launched, announced they're supporting Bitcoin ordinals and BRC20.
Yeah, I saw that.
Pretty cool.
Awesome. So, Super Testnet, I see you accepted the request to speak. We'd love to hear.
Yeah.
What's going on with.
Are you able to hear me very well? Sometimes when I'm on my laptop, people say the audio is really bad.
At first it wasn't, it was a little bit of an echo, but I think it might be getting better.
Let me try and switch to a different device.
Okay. So this rider, I saw it on I think I actually saw it on your feed, Jacob. It seems like it works through NFC. Is that the idea?
That's one of the features, yeah. So they want to be, if you think of hardware wallets currently, they're like, they're meant to be off-chain, cold storage. Like some of them will have, you know, no Bluetooth, so what they call like air gapping, where right. you have to use like either the camera to scan something or use a memory card to, you know, get your keys across and sign something. They want to be much more social. So they're thinking of, they want to be like the Apple Watch for your NFTs that you wear out in public, and you could do transactions, but you can also show off your NFTs. And I think some of the interesting innovations they're doing is that they're moving away from the seed phrase paradigm, and they're going into what they call social recovery, which people have opinions about. I think it's just one design that people can try out, but basically you choose a bucket of friends. It's partially centralized, and you split your keys off. So if something happens to that kind of wallet you're using for fun stuff, I can go ping my two best friends to reveal the parts of my seed phrase, and it can be recovered in that way. So they're innovating in the seed phrase space as well, optimizing for everyday usage and making it for the average kind of like not hardcore. You're not storing your you know, big bag of Bitcoin here. You're storing a small amount just for fun, most likely, and some NFTs. It's still meant to be secure, but it's meant to be more of like a fun hot wallet or social wallet is, I think, the way they're positioning themselves.
Very cool. Yeah, desperately needed. Something a little more practical.
Yep.
You guys should be able to hear me better. I moved to a different device that people usually says has a better audio.
Much way better.
Yeah, so you guys, a gentleman messaged me and said that you guys had questions about BitVM or you were interested in talking about it. So I'm happy to do that. If you guys have any, if there's anything you guys want to know.
Yeah, absolutely. We were talking about it earlier. In general, we're talking about all the different applications being built on Bitcoin. I'm trying to remember if we had any specific questions, but I don't recall them. I know at the time we did, but maybe you can give us just briefly like why you're super excited about it and like its main features that are going to be like transformative for the Bitcoin ecosystem.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty neat. It gives us a lot more flexibility in the kinds of things we can run on Bitcoin. In fact, it makes it so you can run any program that you can convert into the format that BitVM understands. So there's been a number of us who've been doing that. We've been, I've converted a couple of different functions into this new format, an addition function, a length checker, like where you can, or a size checker where you can compare two numbers and it'll figure out which one is bigger. And there's some people who were just today were posting some components for building a SHA-256 circuit for this format, but basically it opens the door so that anything you can think of as a programmer, you can write it and then run it on Bitcoin, and that's pretty neat. I think that knocks down pretty much every door. So you can do anything. You could even write the Ethereum virtual machine and run it on Bitcoin.
That's really cool and quite ambitious. So, do you know or are you familiar with like the Lyft, let's say an application from the Ethereum ecosystem like Aave, is that a simple copy paste if you're running the EVM, or is that like require a lot more like research and development?
Yeah, it needs a lot more research and development right now. There's very little that you can copy paste because this virtual machine, the way we made it work is that we figured out how to run all of the logic gates in Bitcoin. And if you don't know what logic gates are, they're what microprocessors are made of. They take two wires, and if both of them are electrically charged, then they will send a signal on out of it, and that's like called an AND gate. But anyway, microchips are made of these little tiny circuits that you hook together to make more complicated functions. And every program has to eventually run on that circuit board. So it all has to like decompile down into, you know, sending electrons on long wires. And that's what we figured out how to build in BitVM. We figured out how to like recreate any circuit, any microprocessor, or we know how to make all of the components and hook them together. But in order to actually make functions, they have to be written in this format where you actually are sending, you know, zeros and ones through logic gates. And ultimately, all programs do that anyway. But some work has to be done to like take those programs and convert them into this format, because you have to like write them out as in like first send a zero and then a one along this wire and then modify them in this way. So there's a lot of work to be done in order to create tools for converting programs into this format. And we're just getting started on that stuff.
That's really cool. So it's my understanding that the computation happens off-chain. Like, where is this computation happening?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but both parties upload a full copy of hash of the full set of logic gates into a Bitcoin address and fund that Bitcoin address. And so that Bitcoin address essentially has a copy of the program inside of it. And then once they've done that, then both parties to it, who have money in this contract, run a copy of the program off chain. So I would run a copy, let's say it was, you know, like a lending contract or something, and you would run a copy, and we would see what the program says should happen. If the program says I'm supposed to get the money, then great. If the program says you're supposed to get the money, you know, oh no, for me. So we both run a copy of the program, and then we're supposed to do what it says. You know, like if it says I'm supposed to get the money, then you just send it to me from that Bitcoin address that we have our money in. If there's a dispute, if I'm like, okay, it says to give me the money, and you're like, no, I'm not going to do that, then I can find where I can actually run the program and find the part where we disagree. And say, I'm going to run that part. I'm going to run that logic gate on Bitcoin and say, okay, Bitcoin, I want you to show that at this particular step, you know, he says I'm not supposed to get the money and I say I am. And then you can have Bitcoin actually run it and say, okay, here, I side with this person or the other. So you never need to run any code on Bitcoin with BitVM because you both run it off chain and then just do whatever the program says should happen. But if there is a dispute, if one of you won't do what the program says, then you can run wherever you start to disagree in the execution, you can run that part on Bitcoin up to the entire program, and then have Bitcoin determine who's supposed to get the money.
That's really cool. So if there's no dispute, it will be settled off chain through this logic. But if there's a dispute, then Bitcoin becomes the arbiter of it.
Yeah. If there's no dispute, all the Bitcoin sees is you guys put money into a Bitcoin address and then you took it out again. No logic ever goes on chain because you did it off chain and you said, here's what we both agree on how the program should execute. Only if there's a dispute, then you go back to that Bitcoin address and you say, hey, he's not going to co-sign to give me the money. So I need you, Bitcoin, to run some logic. And then you specify what part you guys disagreed on, and you have Bitcoin run that part of the program. And that helps because usually when two people run a program, even if they disagree on the outcome, for some steps of it, they agreed on how it executed. And so you don't really need to run the parts of the program where you both agree because you'll just get the same result that you got off chain. But if there's a part where you disagree, you can have that part run on Bitcoin, and then it can say, yeah, this person's supposed to get the money.
Wow, that's really cool. Thank you for breaking that down. Are the transactions posted to Bitcoin to be an arbitrage, are they like expensive to compute? Have you gone that far?
No, because you're just doing one logic gate at a time, and each logic gate is like really, really simple. It's just like, mm-hmm. I'm going to take a zero and a one, and I'm going to determine whether the outcome is supposed to be a one or a zero based on some rule. And the rules are extremely simple for logic gates. They're like, if both inputs are a one, then put out a one, or if one is a one and one is a zero, then put out a zero. They're very, very simple rules. So the amount of lines of code you actually end up executing are only like 10 lines of code. And it doesn't take any meaningful processing at all on Bitcoin, because you've already done all the hard stuff off chain to find where there's a disagreement.
That's really cool. Okay. And are there any, is there a roadmap or some sort of internally, I know a lot of people are working on it from different angles, but is there any sort of timeline?
I made like a to-do list of things that need, that I would like to see done in order to get like a sidechain built. That's one of the things I want to do with it, is make a Bitcoin sidechain that works better than the ones we have today. Because then we could, once you can put Bitcoins onto a sidechain and reliably get it off again, then you have a lot more opportunities to do whatever you want on that sidechain, like build in new scripting environments or whatever. So I have like a to-do list. It's on my GitHub. It's called like Things BitVM Needs. And various people from the BitVM Telegram channel are contributing to that. And we're making the stuff that we need in order to build a sidechain. But of course, you can do whatever you want with it, because we have a demo implementation that just, you know, if you can write out a logical circuit, then you can run any program that you write. So some people are playing with that. There was a guy who made like a little game where you could have two knights on a chessboard, and then you could try to kill the other person's knight, which is kind of fun. And there was one guy who made tic-tac-toe for it. So yeah, there's people are contributing different things as their interests, wherever their interests carry them. But I'm personally interested in sidechains, so that's one of the things I'm working towards.
Wow, I could go on for a while asking questions, but we're kind of going a little over time, and I don't want to keep the other speakers. Maybe another time, Super Testnet, we can talk about it.
That'd be great.
Okay, awesome. This pretty much wraps up today's space. I'd like to thank our speakers, Jacob, Nick, Jack, for joining us. It's been a fascinating discussion. I learned many new things. I hope those in the audience learned new things as well. You can check the profile pictures to get in touch if you want to reach out. And that's it. Thank you all very much for joining.
Thanks for hosting. It was great.